Just having a list of questions or topics even in mind to talk about, and making sure that the guest has that same information so they know what they're getting into and can think about it beforehand. It just makes things so much easier.
There's over 1.9 million podcasts. Most of them never see the results they expected. They want to monetize, but their show ends up costing them money, and they never achieve the listenership they desire. This show will help you launch, grow, monetize, and inspire with your podcast. Get ready to take notes, because here's your host, Adam Adams.
Welcome back to the podcast on podcasting, or the POP for short. I'm a friend. I'm not your POP. I'm Adam Adams, and I'm excited. On this podcast, the main goal, as you know, because you've been listening for a while, the main goal is just to kind of add value to you as a podcaster. You might be a brand new podcaster, or you might be growing your show and needing some of those tips and tricks and strategies. And so it's always good for me to bring on different types of guests. So sometimes I'll have a guest who's had a podcast for maybe 5 or 6 or 7 years. And sometimes I have a guest who's only had a podcast for a few weeks or maybe just a couple of months. And sometimes I have podcast guests on that serve you, the podcaster, as well. So today, I think we have somebody who recently started a podcast. Bryce, how long have you had your show?
Probably about 6 months.
6 months in the works. And so what we're going to be talking about is, I think Bryce's story is going to be relatable to you. And I also think that some of the things that he's going through today might be things that people have had a podcast for 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 years start to forget that they were going through. So it's going to be fun kind of going through a few questions with him. Just to give you a bit of background on Bryce Lord, he started in theater as an actor and then a stage director as well, moved into the arts administration at the university, more into nonprofit management. He works at University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, supporting nonprofits. And what's kind of cool is the show that he created 6 months ago, based on the pandemic, is called Nonprofits in Java. And I don't know what my deal was. I saw that for the first time thinking it was some type of software Java, but no, this is coffee. So he wanted to sit down with nonprofit leaders around the state that he serves. And he was hoping to do that, but because of the pandemic, he made it virtual coffee. So it's podcast conversations that he's having with the nonprofit leaders in and around his state of Wisconsin. So welcome to the show, Bryce.
Thanks. Anything that I missed?
Yeah,
no,
yeah,
man. No, I'm stoked. You got it great.
I'm stoked. Perfect.
All the basics.
Speaking of basics, I want to find out, just like with your business, or how you make money if you're working for somebody else, how you make money, who are you serving, and how do you serve them?
Sure. So as you mentioned, I work at the UW-Milwaukee for an organization we call the Helen Bader Institute for Nonprofit Management. And it's a kind of an academic research center that has educational degrees and does research into the nonprofit sector. And what I do a lot of is sort of community focus on how we can support nonprofits around Wisconsin and get them to lead and manage more sustainable organizations. So when we all closed down and we're working from home, I've been working from home for almost a year now, I found I could do most everything from my little home office, except the one thing that I really missed was sitting down with these people, with my colleagues, with people in the community in a coffee shop and just talking shop and catching up on personal stuff and just having those conversations that help build relationships both in and out of the workplace. And so I thought, you know, like everybody else, I listen to podcasts. And one of the things that I enjoy the most about the programs I listen to are those conversations and just the interaction. And I thought, well, why don't I try that and just connect to some of my friends / colleagues and sit down and have a conversation and focus on different aspects of the organizations they work in, use it as perhaps a promotional tool to help educate more general public about how the nonprofit sector works, and some of the challenges that they've really been having to face in light of the pandemic, in light of the closures and not being able to deliver the services they do. So I always say this is a Bryce thing. It's not a work thing. It's just kind of, I hate to call it a hobby because it does involve work, but it's just kind of my own little project. Then I'll see if I'm in a position where we'll see if it goes along well enough. Maybe I'll let the office take over the costs and the supporting the podcast in the future. But for now, it's just kind of something that I do to help with the promotion of the kind of work I do and the people that I work with.
Okay. Based on just kind of what my understanding is so far, it does sound like you make money through the university. Is that part true?
Mm-hmm.
And I had to ask you a question while you were drinking Java, so it's perfect.
That's all right. That's all right.
And then the second thing that kind of came to my mind, it almost sounds like you're additionally supporting the nonprofits directly. In some way, I feel like maybe you're doing a consulting role for different nonprofits in your state. Is that not true?
I mean, in some ways, the day job does have some of that aspect in that mm-hmm. we try and connect them with services, connect them with support. I do a lot of professional development training. I do a lot of, in some ways, I was doing a lot of this kind of thing, sitting and talking to people, giving presentations on different topics anyway, because of my job. So that it segued very nicely into more of a one-on-one setup. So part of the idea of the podcast, like I mentioned, is that the feedback I get from the audience is that, oh, I didn't know that. Or, wow, I had no idea that these organizations were going through this. I've talked to several arts leaders, and arts organizations are hit so hard because they can't meet in groups and therefore have completely lost all sort of revenue. And so how do you survive and how do you pivot to make that worthwhile and stay alive, basically, as an organization? So, you know, there's been a lot of that kind of education and advocacy behind the idea of it mm-hmm. that I think will, you know, it definitely has a place, even once we do get back into the real world, hopefully soon, that it will continue, because I find there's a real need for that kind of education on this particular topic. And so what turned into just my need to talk to people, I think has built into something a little bit more, with a little bit more sustainability and value to the greater community. So that's hopefully, that's my goal.
I love it. I think a lot of the people that are listening now who might be starting a podcast might be curious if others are trying to kind of make money, you know, monetize their show. Do you have any sponsors? Do you have a way of generating revenue through the podcast, or is it more of just a passion project for you?
At this point, it's a passion project. That was sort of my plan, was to get my feet in the water, kind of test it, see how it is, see if it's something that I really, really did want to do before tackling the financial aspect of it. Right now, it's, I don't want to call it a hobby because I do say it is kind of work-related, but at that point, I'm a one-man shop. I'm kind of doing everything regarding the podcast, and we'll kind of see how it goes in the next 6 months as to whether or not it will be supported. I think one aspect of it that realistically, in terms of financial support, is because it is so closely tied to work, it would be very easy for this to become just another aspect of my day job. And therefore, the costs would be covered by the office. And I wouldn't necessarily have to worry about financial support or sponsors in the way that some others definitely do.
So. Got it. For you, you're reaching out to, well, I have two questions. I want to start with your listener. So when you launched your podcast, did you have your ideal listener in mind? If so, who was that? And if not, who has it become?
That's actually a very good question, because I had in mind that I hoped that this would be the general public that would find this interesting. And in some ways, because it was more of a passion project, I wasn't as tied up or concerned about the listener. I just wanted to kind of do this, see how it went, and see who would listen. And I do find that that has evolved into a small but regular listenership that, from what I can tell, are people that do work in these kind of areas in the nonprofit world or are closely tied to it and have some degree of understanding. I would love to kind of expand beyond that. That's, you know, the hope that the audience becomes people who don't know about this and don't relate to it on a day-to-day basis. I find that the episodes that have had the higher listenership are with people that are perhaps more known in the community already. And, you know, so people are anxious to hear what they have to say, or the topics are very, very pertinent because of the specifics of the pandemic and all of that. So I would love to be able to grow beyond that, like I say, as more of a broader community audience. But I think I'm pretty happy with where it's at right now as it's kind of finding my way through. I honestly wasn't sure if anybody would find this interesting. And I realized from the start that it's, even if it does really well, it's probably going to be a fairly small, you know, niche audience, which is fine.
So for you, you just mentioned a couple of guests that you've had on the show, or that you've had different types of guests, and some of them have, you know, a little bit more weight in the community or in the space, and they're getting more downloads from the podcast than others. I'm curious what your experience has been getting those guests, reaching out to those guests, getting them on your show. Is there any pushback? Do you feel nervous asking? Just tell us the overall like feeling that it is to go in and find these guests, and then on after the feeling, more of like the success, like if it's working or if you have something that you say that really has them jump on board faster.
Right. I think, well, as I said, the whole idea of starting it was to talk with people that I talk to regularly anyway. And for the most part, the response has been, oh yeah, that'll be fun. Let's do that. I have had a couple people that are like, oh, I'm really, really busy, who then admit like they were afraid. They didn't quite know what it was going to be. And they didn't, you know, they're not necessarily comfortable talking in front of a microphone or, you know, hearing themselves on the radio, as it were. Mm-hmm. But I would say, because of the pools of people that I've been approaching, like I say, in every single case, they're people I knew already. And, you know, our relationships were strong enough that it was easy enough to say, you know, if you don't, that's fine. If you just are too busy and want to do it later, that's cool too. But for the most part, I think I've only had one or two people that were hesitant to do it at all.
Yeah.
For different reasons. But
yeah, based on kind of how you responded that question, it made me think of a strategy that could help the listener when they're reaching out to somebody. Because you mentioned that sometimes people might be hesitant and they might throw up a smokescreen objection to the effect of they're busy, but really what they mean is I'm not sure what it's going to be like. And so I was thinking while you said that, maybe if you and if the listener finds themselves in the same position when they're looking for their guest, if we just kind of design it first in the mind of the person we're going to ask, hey, all it is we sit down with a couple of microphones and a cup of coffee, and it's just a fun conversation that ends up getting recorded. And I will publish the pertinent information or the best information on my podcast after editing. Maybe that would open up people would be like, okay, that makes sense. I don't know if that'll help or not, but it seems like something that, you know, the psychology of the other human being might be a little bit more welcoming when they can visualize themselves doing it. Because the way some of us ask, and I'm not saying this is for sure you, Bryce, or anything like that, but the way some of us ask, we might be assuming too much of what the potential guest knows about this, which they don't know anything. And so they're confused, so they can't say yes. A confused mind says no. They're very interesting. I just thought I'd bring that up in case we have another podcaster that might be going through that. Maybe they could try something like that.
I was just going to say that I also have to remember that I originally come from a performing background. And so the comfort of microphones and, in this case, a Zoom conversation with a camera pointed at me, I'm more comfortable than some of these other people who have never done anything like this. And so you have to take that into consideration, just breaking the ice a little bit and making it a little more just warm and conversational to kind of reduce the fear factor, I think.
Yeah. Well, you've been doing this for 6 months now, and I'm sure you've, you know, learned a couple of things that even though you came from that type of background, you know, you're comfortable with a mic and everything like that. Maybe there's a few things that you learned that are hacks that you might be able to share with the listener so that they can streamline their success.
I would say the most helpful thing for me is to actually make sure I have notes on what I want to talk about. I mean, because yes, the idea is that it's just this unscripted conversation, right? But I've tried that and I end up stumbling over my thoughts and editing becomes a huge disaster afterwards. And so just having a list of questions or topics even in mind to talk about and making sure that the guest has that same information so they know what they're getting into and can think about it beforehand. It just makes things so much easier and more natural then. And with the understanding that, you know, things can pivot, conversations change and shift, but at the end of the day, you've got a topic you want to discuss and you've actually done it. You haven't actually pivoted off in a complete, gone down a rabbit hole on a different topic. So I think that's key, is just making sure that you have everything lined up and don't wing it, you know?
Okay.
I think more than anything, the talking part is easy for me. Just the conversation. I can have a conversation with just about anybody, but you have to have some sort of structure to it. Or like I say, I can very easily go down a rabbit hole talking about God knows what and completely miss what I wanted to talk about in the first place.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I've got ADHD and squirrel. What?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I have another question, and it's less about the hacks, but more about just any software, any automation tools, scheduling tools, anything that maybe even editing tools. But what types of tools and automation have you found to be useful in your journey for growing this podcast?
Sure. Well, I normally use Calendly in my own day-to-day just for work because I'm constantly, I hate the back and forth of emails to try and find a time to meet. So I just say, here's my calendar. You pick the time. And that also, I think in terms of the podcast, really makes it easy for the guest to just make sure that it's at their pace in their comfort zone. And, you know, so they can find a time where they can breathe first. In terms of other technology, I use Audacity for editing. And that's been the biggest learning curve for me because I'm not the tech guy really when it comes to sound design and editing. And that I've had to, I'm totally self-taught and I'm still learning and it's still rough. I have listened to webinars and courses and read blogs and podcasts about different tips and tricks and have kind of come up with a list of kind of a process for make sure you do this, make sure you add that filter and that effect and make sure that you know, just kind of my own process for how I put it together. I am probably, like I say, being self-taught, there are probably so many hacks and shortcuts that I know nothing about and will discover in 6 months and say, why haven't I been doing that for all this time?
Based on, I mean, you're talking about, you know, doing your own post-production through Audacity. I did that for a long time. We use Vegas Pro. And I finally got it offloaded to virtual assistants. And now I built a company where we do post-production for other people. And so it really intrigues me to just think about other people's reasons behind things, why you decided to go the route of editing your own. If it was more of like a fun thing for you, more of like a budget thing, or more of like you didn't know that there was companies out there. And so I'm just curious about kind of your thought process there. And also based on like your experience starting out doing your own post-production, if you started it over, or actually rather than if you started it over, I want to think about, you know, our current listener who's a podcaster themselves or a future podcaster. I want you to maybe share with them what are the considerations that they ought to be thinking about if they're going to do their own post-production or just hire it out. What are your thoughts on that?
Sure. Yeah.
I know that was a big question.
No, I totally get it. I'm with you. I would say in terms of the post-production, first of all, I didn't know that there were companies that did this. I know that there are, you know, for some of the more well-known podcasts, that there are whole production companies behind them, all of that. And I knew that wasn't me. And so for me, it really was starting from scratch, poking around, looking at different hosting services and trying to find the best tips on the internet of all places where there's a wealth of right and wrong answers. You know,
true.
You know, I think to some degree that decision was really just out of ignorance. I didn't know what other options existed. But I would think, and I have changed. So I've tried GarageBand. I've tried a number of different software, editing softwares, and just kind of said, I like this one better, as well as hosting platforms. And
sorry, I know we're getting derailed here, but have you tried multiple different hosting platforms for your podcast already in the last six months?
I've looked at a couple different ones. I have a couple different accounts with ones that are just because I haven't made the cut to jump completely over to this other one.
Got it. Do you mind sharing?
Yeah, I mean,
who
I started.
Use or who you
I started
use?
With Anchor, and I'm now on Buzzsprout.
Okay, I'm not here to be somebody who's going to bash anything. All I can say is I've never used Anchor and none of my clients use Anchor, but I've used a few and my clients use a lot of different ones. And I've been managing a lot of rooms in this app called Clubhouse that didn't come out too long ago, but I've only been doing that for about a week and a half now. And it seems like there's a lot of people that didn't like Anchor. They don't think that it has what it needs. And they say something like it owns your information. I haven't looked into it yet because none of our clients use it, unfortunately. So I'm just not very experienced. But I like Libsyn. I use Libsyn. And we have a lot of clients that use Buzzsprout. And I seem to hear a ton of really good feedback about Buzzsprout. And also, when we use their, is it called the interface? When we jump onto their site on behalf of our clients, we tend to like it. We tend to like the way that it's set up. It seems user-friendly. It shows you good metrics. So is that kind of what you're thinking?
That's exactly.
Got it.
I found the usability of their interface just to be so much more understandable, especially for somebody new, relatively new. So
awesome. Good stuff. So if you did it all over again, would you edit your own or would you hire it out from the beginning? And or what do you think that the listener should do?
I mean, I think it depends on your interest and willingness to tackle the technical aspects of it. I have enjoyed just the poking around and learning just because it's, you know, I kind of consider myself a lifelong learner and here's another skill that I can develop. I will say it's to some degree, it's the bane of my existence. That's what slows down episodes for me more than anything else is.
It's like a bottleneck, right?
Yeah. And it becomes that this whole thing that I just, oh, I have to go do that. Or it's not going to move forward, you know? So I think part of the decision was financial too, because this is, like I said, kind of a hobby.
And there's not a sponsor or the work's not paying for it yet. And so you wanted to make sure it could maintain. And it was in the middle of a pandemic too, when you started.
Right. So. And this, you know, and to some degree, the whole startup process was very spur of the moment, really. And I thought, well, let's just jump in with both feet and see what happens, sink or swim. And I'm learning to swim as I'm going along. But I would say that knowing all things, I would have looked, definitely at least looked into a production company or a service of some kind. At least first, I'm kind of starting to poke around with that now. I have a couple of different colleagues at other universities in other states that have podcasts, but they commandeer students in the sort of AVIT arena
to
do that work.
Smart.
And I'm like, how can I do that? Or can I? But I think, like I say, it's been kind of fun to figure that out. And I also find that, again, coming from the theater as a director, the editing portion, I have more control over the pace and flow of the conversation and kind of moving things. And that makes me satisfied in some way, kind of an artistic muscle flexing thing too.
I get that.
So, doing it all over again, I would certainly check into other services, just mainly because of the time commitment.
Well, we have two more questions that I definitely want to ask you, and then I'll also share how the listener can get a hold of you, find you, or if they want to check out, your podcast about nonprofits, then they'll be able to do that. But we'll take it just a quick break, and we'll be right back with those last couple questions.
Hey, my friend, as you know, this episode is sponsored by my company, growyourshow.com. We want you to be able to have the best tools at your disposal without costing you a whole arm and a leg. So right now you can get a free list of vetted equipment that like mics, mixers, webcams, sound treatment, editing software, everything that you need. I created the whole PDF with direct purchase links just to save you time and money to help it be more convenient for you. So this free PDF will help you skip all the guesswork. If it's on there, it's vetted and approved by yours truly. And if it's not on there, it's probably not worth the money. So go ahead and get yours at growyourshow.com/PDF. Let's get back into the show.
And we're back with Bryce Lord. And Bryce, the first question I want to ask you is just, what's the worst experience you ever had with your podcast?
I mean, I hate to say it, but they've gone fairly smoothly. But I did have one where just being a self-editor, the sound quality of the guest was really bad. The guest had a stutter. It was just kind of a perfect storm of all the things of somebody who doesn't quite know my editing process that I had to take on. And it came right over the holidays and right over. I tried to start out this whole podcast with episodes every 2 weeks. And then we got hit by the end of the year and this kind of, like I say, perfect storm of an editing nightmare. And it took me 2.5 months to get my next episode out because I just kept putting it off and putting it off and finally got it done and realized, you know what? That's not so bad after all. I was just kind of using it as an excuse not to do it, I guess. I find, like I say, it's been a learning curve and the fun is in the people that I talk with. And as far as bad experiences, I don't know that it's been awful other than, it's been kind of a getaway from all of the other awful that's out there. So it's been kind of a nice comfort zone, I guess, in some degrees. Okay.
Last question I wanted to find out from you is after, 6 months of working on your podcast, interviewing other guests, buying the different equipment, doing your own post-production, writing the show notes, publishing every other week on average. Is there any one thing that you would say you're still struggling with today?
I do think, it is the editing part is probably the biggest struggle for me. I also find now that we're into 2021 that to some degree, time management is a big issue because I am doing this kind of on top of the day job and trying to have some sort of a life and trying to manage all of that, that I need to reassess just the time commitment and how I want to tackle this moving forward. I do want to tackle it moving forward. I just need to find out a better process. One that actually works within my schedule better. It was fun at the beginning to just, let's do this. Let's have fun. This is great. And I get to talk to people and play with toys and all of that. But now the honeymoon period is over. And if this is going to have a life, I just need to really sit down and make sure that it's fitting in with everything else more functionally, I think.
I want to speak to two things, and one of them is going to really be putting you on the spot, Bryce. And so I apologize ahead of time.
No worries. No worries.
So while you were sharing that last bit, the listener could probably push rewind to just hear it again. And I think this is beneficial for you, Bryce, and super beneficial for anyone who's having their own podcast. If you noticed, you tapped the desk a few times.
I did.
And it comes into the mic like really, really, really well. And so the things that we as podcasters need to make sure of, there's a couple ways to get away from that. Number one, and it sounds horrible because most of us like talking with our hands, we can stop talking with our hands. Number two, if we do one of these arms that I use, it makes it a little easier. So if we're touching the desk, it doesn't go straight into the mic. So I want you as a listener right now to go ahead and rewind it, check that out, think about it, because it doesn't happen with every listener. Maybe you noticed it and maybe you didn't, but some listeners will notice it and they're going to get bothered by it. And so as us, as you know, content creators in this podcasting space, we're going to need to try our hardest to find what we can do to make the listening experience easier. So that's the first thing. The other thing that I was going to say is you were talking, Bryce, about this being kind of like a bottleneck. It's kind of holding you back. And you're really only doing an episode, as I understand it, maybe I'm wrong, every other week. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm wondering here is like how long it actually takes you from the time that you push record in number of hours worked, from the time it takes you to push record to the time that you have it published with show notes and everything.
I hadn't really thought of it in terms of that. I know with my own the editing process, it's I'll do a little bit here, a little bit there, because I don't have that kind of urgency to kick it out. I've intentionally kind of given myself the time to take it slow, you know, in trying to get things moving. I don't know. I actually haven't really, I should probably sit down and like start a tick list of how many hours it does take all told. Because like I say, I'll take, you know, half hour here, you know, 20 minutes here, and just when I can kind of.
Got it.
So.
Got it. Well, how does the listener find you and get a hold of you?
So the show is Nonprofits in Java. I have a website, nonprofitsinjava.com. I'm on Spotify, Apple, pretty much all the platforms out there. All you got to do is look for the name and chances are you'll find it. It's not software. It's coffee.
Coffee. I love it. And I would be drinking coffee with you, but I'm on my intermittent fasting today.
Oh, how's that going?
You can drink coffee if it's black, but I'm drinking apple cider vinegar and water. So that's
coffee.
What I drink.
I'll stick with
basically
coffee
all day until I eat dinner at usually about 5:30 or so.
Well, so you're a better man than I am. I'll tell you.
When you told me, I was like, what did you have for breakfast? And you're like, coffee. Oh, and I had a cookie. And I was like, oh, I haven't had a cookie in so long. But I have lost 51 pounds. So it's been pretty remarkable.
Congratulations.
In a fairly short amount of time.
I might have to like steal your diet tips or something for a while.
You know, for the most part, I was eating anything that I wanted for however long I wanted, as long as it was after 5 p.m. And so I would eat like carbs and candy and whatever. And that was still working, which is weird because just eating at one meal a day was still making it happen, even if I had 13,000 calories in one meal. And I don't mean 1,300, by the way. Like I was eating two large pizzas dipped in 16 ounces of homemade ranch dressing. And then I would have like ice cream and all this kind of stuff. So I like slowed that down and I'm trying this more of people call it keto, like whatever makes you be in ketosis.
Right.
And so for the most part, I'm eating a lot of grass-fed beef and or sardines and or avocados. And other than that, I try not to eat almost anything. Just grass-fed beef, sardines, and avocados.
I've tried the whole keto route, and I have relatives that swear by it. And I have had success, but I end up doing what I call keto light because I don't have the diligence to really stick to it. all the rules and everything. I'm like, I'll have this cookie, just one, you know.
I love it. Well, it's really good having you. I hope that the listener does go and check out your show, especially if they're doing anything with nonprofits or just like coffee, to jump on over, find that. You said you have nonprofits and java.com. Can you spell that out just for my assistant who's going to be putting that in the show notes? I want to make sure if it's the and sign or spelled out A-N-D, you know?
It is spelled out A-N-D. It's nonprofits, A-N-D. java.com.
Awesome. All right. So that's in the show notes for the listener if they do want to check it out. And I appreciate you coming on, giving us the ins and outs of your journey over the last 6 months, what you've learned. And I'd love to have you back on the show. Thank you, Bryce.
Great. Thank you. Nice to sit and talk with you.
I'll have coffee with you next time.
Sounds awesome.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
This episode's brought to you by growyourshow.com. Grow Your Show lets you be the star of your show. While we handle all the hard stuff, we offer reliable and affordable post-production services that allow you to grow your show organically without all the work. So go ahead and check out the website right now and feel free to schedule a call with me and let's take your show to the next level. Again, growyourshow.com. You just press record. We handle the rest.